Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody, we got a great one today, you know, for a change, because finally I got a new guest, Dana Milbank from the Washington Post. Not one of my normal repeat guests like Norm Ornstein or Dahlia Lithwick, who are okay, they're great too. Very authoritative and brilliant, both Norm and Dahlia. So this is a great one today, as usual. See? That's right. As usual, I'm going to say it, because when I open the show with we've got a great one today, you know, for a change, that's a conceit. You see, because it's cheeky. And what it's really saying is that all of these are great. OK, this is the first time I've pulled back the curtain on my we've got a great one today for a change conceit. And I hope that doesn't ruin the joke for you, which is always the first joke in each podcast. But you know what? I think that needlessly explicating that joke makes it even funnier. And I'm not doing it again. This is the first and only time. So those of you who've just had the privilege and benefit of my over-explaining the joke, don't share that with anyone. That'll be my little gift for you. So Dana Milbank has covered Congress for decades now, and I've been fascinated and appalled by what has and is happening in the House. This week, the absolute worst people in the House being rewarded precisely for being the worst people, getting prime committee assignments. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who in the last Congress was stripped of her committee assignments because of stuff she had said in the past, a 9/11 denier. She said no plane had hit the Pentagon. She has said that the shootings at Parkland were a false flag and called for Speaker Pelosi to be executed for treason. That space lasers from the Rothschild banking family had started the wildfires in California. And of course, that was crazy. Those were George Soros space lasers. Yes, they were Jewish space lasers, but from the Soros family. But this week, a 9/11 denier was given a prime slot on the Homeland Security Committee as a reward for backing Kevin McCarthy. And she joins Lauren Boebert, Scott Perry, and Paul Gosar on the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. That panel's chairman has made investigating President Biden and his family a top priority. Gosar, you recall, lost his committee assignments last Congress after posting a video of him killing AOC. And Scott Perry is under investigation by the Justice Department for January 6th. Perry evidently being the one who contacted Mark Meadows to suggest a guy in the Justice Department named Jeffrey Clark, who might be very interested in helping President Trump remain in the White House for another term. So I have a lot of questions for Milbank on where this goes. And we get to the big scary question, the debt limit. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen started extraordinary measures this week to buy some time, a few months, before we default. And the consequences of that are, of course, potentially catastrophic. I'm kind of obsessed with that. I was there in the Senate in 2011 when we came close to defaulting, and we were dealing with irresponsible ideologues then. This group, I am afraid, is a much worse group and are willing to go off the cliff. Now, I explore that with Dana. We didn't find a salutary solution, but there is some time, and the consequences are so dire that I just have to believe that some sane Republicans will step in at the last minute and save the world economy. Gee, now that I say it, I'm panicking again. Anyway, coming up, Dana Milbank, a great one for a change. Also, by the way, next week we're going to be having Joyce Vance. We're going to get off the House and Congress because it's driving me crazy, and we'll go to Joyce Vance, one of our favorites, former U.S. attorney from the Northern District of Alabama, and of course now a professor at the law school there in Alabama, and a frequent contributor on MSNBC. Barbara McQuaid also was a U.S. attorney here in the Eastern District of Michigan, and a professor of law at Michigan. Both fabulous guests, and we'll be talking, of course, about the developments in the cases against President Trump, including we may be seeing indictments. We may be seeing these coming out of Georgia any time now, hopefully in the coming week. So that's going to be a great one. Now to Dana Milbank. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Dana Milbank writes a column, Washington Sketch, for the Washington Post, where he started working in the year 2000. Is that right, Dana?
That's right. January 1st of 2000.
The millennium. Dana has been taking an especially close look at the new Republican House over the last few weeks. And I want to get his take on the new Republican majority and what appears to be a takeover of the party by the absolute worst elements of the Republican Party. Is that fair?
Well, not only is it fair, Al, I think it's been happening, you know, year after year now. The problem is there are more and more of the worst. So we're getting sort of an ever finer distillation of the worst of the worst. So, but they really have, I think at this moment, you know, what was left of the establishment and the Republican Party did wave the white flag.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the numbers. But first, I want to talk about in the 15 ballots that it took to elect McCarthy, was every step of that completely orchestrated by this radical and irresponsible faction, or did it fall into place for them? Because it seemed like it just fell perfectly into place. If you see now the committee assignments they're getting, the rules that are written, all that stuff, did they, like, for example, they split up? I mean, the Matt Gaetzes and the 20 of them, was that like just all figured out in advance, do you think?
I think we might be giving them a little bit too much credit to think that they could organize in such a fashion. I think it's more likely that McCarthy...
Well, they're the Steel Trap Caucus. They really...
But McCarthy, I think, you know, I think it's much more attributable to bungling on his part there. His plan was to go in and basically, you know, outlast them through attrition. He was going to bore them into submission by making them vote over and over again on the floor, not be able to go home to their districts and see their families. But it was clearly a miscalculation because it only gave more attention to the holdouts and made McCarthy look weaker. And then it was after, I guess it was Wednesday night, you saw what happened there. They went off the floor and he basically said, okay, now we're going to cave, in so many words.
But he was gradually caving all along, right?
I think he was gradually caving all along. You know, he certainly met a lot of their demands before it ever started. That wasn't sufficient. He had gone down to, you know, a five-member motion to vacate. But what he did after Thursday night was basically hand it over, say, whatever you need, I'm going to do whatever it takes. You know, so he'd lost all leverage at that point. And he just said, you tell me, give me your list of demands. These are all going to be met. And, you know, at one point, Matt Gaetz, who was, you know, sort of the comic ringleader of the whole thing, said they were having trouble coming up with anything else to ask for because he had given them everything that they asked for. So I think the Freedom Caucus, as they're called, I think kind of stumbled into this winning strategy. I think it's more instinct than strategy on their part. Their instinct, you know, you've seen a lot of these guys up there. You know, they're bomb throwers. Their whole purpose is to throw sand in the gears of government. They are really expert at making things stop. So I don't think it was a strategy. It was a tactic, right? They wanted to be a thorn in McCarthy's side for as long as they possibly could, then see what happens. And sure enough, it turned out well. I don't want to give them too much credit that it's really a thought as opposed to an instinct. And that is government bad. We stop government.
Well, okay. Speaking of which, so now they got all these amazing committee assignments.
Yes. Can you imagine what that House Oversight Committee is going to be like?
Okay. That has Marjorie Taylor Greene, Scott Perry, Lauren Boebert, and Paul Gosar.
And Jim Jordan was already there, you know, a couple more of the, I mean, it's going to be absolute mayhem. And, you know, Comer, who's leading it, launching his, you know, press conference, said he really is going to, you know, be all about investigating Joe Biden. But in the end, everything he said in his rollout was about Hunter Biden and the laptop. So this is essentially going to be the Hunter Biden committee. And you've got all the loudest, most out there members of the party who will be taking turns whacking away at Hunter on that committee. So, I mean, that is going to be an absolute circus that I think will be even more out of control than Jim Jordan's weaponization, or what the Democrats are calling the tinfoil hat committee.
Right. Well, okay. The weaponization of the government, it's a subcommittee. So they're going to be investigating people who are investigating them. Right.
Well, essentially, right. It's called the weaponization of the government. So, but where do they perceive the government to be weaponized? Well, the Justice Department, the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, which they all feel are picking unfairly on conservatives. So, yes, they've given themselves the authority to investigate ongoing investigations.
When you say they gave themselves the authority, they are going to be able to subpoena what?
I mean, they've given themselves the authority to meddle, to issue subpoenas, to demand people appear before them. The problem, of course, is that doesn't mean that the Justice Department is going to respond. In fact, if there was anything to come out of the Trump administration, it was the realization that a president's administration doesn't really have to respond to congressional inquiries, even impeachment inquiries, much at all.
Don McGahn, all of them.
Right. It's quite easy to run out the clock on all of these things. So they kind of, unfortunately for their own strategy, left behind the roadmap of how to resist their strategy. So I suppose they can hold everybody in the Biden administration in contempt of Congress and then turn it over to the Biden Justice Department to enforce the contempt of Congress. You're right in pointing out that they've given themselves these powers. That doesn't mean it translates into actual power. It'll be the ability to certainly make a lot of noise.
And of course, how many of them are in contempt of Congress by not answering the January 6th committee?
Right. Well, that came up, and then there's the question of the I think it's a half dozen current members of the House Republican Party sought pardons from President Trump for their role in January 6th. This is where you get into they're basically investigating the investigations into themselves.
What are they going to try to have access to that they will be able to get access to check on the investigations of themselves?
Right. Well, it's I'm sure that they've already done the, preserve all your records and will be demanding every document. You know, this is where the battle will be played out over the coming year. We've been through these sorts of disputes many times. They'll demand every document that the Justice Department ever produced, and the Justice Department will return to them a completely unsatisfying number of documents that don't say much. And then if passes prologue, it'll go to court, and they'll fight over which documents are protected by executive privilege or which ones are responsive to their various subpoenas. But, so I think we'll be talking about the constant demands for testimony, for documents from the Biden administration. The Biden administration's very likely stonewalling of that. And the other thing that Jim Jordan at least claims Republicans have, he calls them whistleblowers. Now, whether they're actually whistleblowers who've seen wrongdoing or they just don't like what they've seen in the Biden administration, but they'll have figures from within the federal bureaucracy up there to testify.
Yeah, they had this thing where they complained about the FBI during their investigation of the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. And Bill Barr appointed a prosecutor to look at that, Dunbar. And, in terms of that, and that didn't pan out.
Right. And he has largely come up empty.
Pretty much. I think there was one, like, FISA warrant that shouldn't have been put out there.
Nothing, at least so far, has been found in terms of the high level officials in the Justice Department doing anything untoward.
To me, they're really, I think, talking to their base, right? Their MAGA base when they do these things. And what I wonder is, how is this all going to look to the American people over the next 2 years?
Yeah, well, I think we got a pretty good clue of that because Sean Hannity came to the Rayburn Room right after Kevin McCarthy's speakership victory, if we can call it that, and did a town hall from there under the George Washington oil painting. So I just went through the transcript and looked at, how often they said certain words. So the economy was mentioned, I think, twice. Jobs was mentioned once. Inflation was mentioned once. Investigations came up 20 times. So I think what the American public is going to see is probably by an order of magnitude, what this new Congress is talking about is not about the economy, not about inflation, not about Ukraine and foreign affairs even, but about investigating the Biden administration. It seems to me that voters will say, is this what we in fact asked for? Is a Congress devoted entirely to investigating the executive branch?
I think, hear me out here, people care about the economy.
True enough.
Okay.
I've heard this said before.
Yeah, and what I wonder is what percentage of the Republican caucus are just nuts or are MAGA? Because it seems to me that it is such a large percentage,
mm-hmm.
and that so many of them are in safe districts.
Yes.
And don't care, because they don't care. They care about themselves and their being there and their power, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are actually some ways to measure this. You know, look at who voted to overturn the election.
Well, 139 Republicans.
Okay, but voted, right, but who's counting? So we've got what about two thirds of the caucus. So you asked how many are nuts. I'd say, well, okay, about two thirds of them. And we've seen a similar number on other votes, you know, will be a must pass legislation, you know, like we had at the end of the last Congress, without which the government will shut down, will go into default, cataclysmic consequences. You get about one third of Republicans voting against catastrophe and two thirds voting to bring on catastrophe. So I think that's roughly the proportion you're dealing with. That one third of Republicans, you know, the old Chamber of Commerce Republicans, could, in theory, govern with two thirds of the Democratic Party and have a real, working, sane majority. It's just that's not in a million years going to happen, because those who did that would soon be booted out of their party in primaries. And you're right, 95% of all members of the House, but, you know, Republicans as well as Democrats are in safe seats, you know, whether that's, you know, just because of naturally occurring things, you know, a lot of Democrats live in cities, or because of artificial things like gerrymandering. But, you know, so that means for 95% of the Republicans, the only threat to them is going to be in a party primary. And one of Kevin McCarthy's many concessions was that his super PAC, the Congressional Leadership Fund, is no longer going to play ball in safe Republican primaries, which means that the Club for Growth and the other really extreme MAGA type groups are going to be unopposed, so they can put their money behind the craziest candidate in the race. And that's in, you know, safe seats are 95% of the seats. So that's why we're going to have ever crazier waves of Republicans admitted to the Congress. They're not in the relatively few swing districts. They're getting crazier in the red seats.
Let me ask you how this might play. The thing I'm most worried about, and I think Americans should be most worried about, is the debt ceiling. I mean, I don't think that would be a surprise to you. I was there in 2011 mm-hmm. when we went up to the last minute, and it actually cost us, you know, billions of dollars, and because it came so close, mm-hmm. and we got a downgrade of our bond rating from S&P. And to me, this is sort of like looking ahead, the most important, and this is going to come up in the not that long a distant future, right?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, this is it's a totally artificial crisis, as you know, that, you know, arguably this, you don't even need to have these votes to approve the increase in the debt limit.
Well, you do.
Well, because we've decided
to do that.
They've established, right. There's no, what I'm saying is there's no like underlying fundamental reason why that has to be the case. Other than everybody got together and said, this would be a good idea.
It was automatically raised all along mm-hmm. until they decided to use it. 2011 was the first time, I think, that mm-hmm. it really seriously got to the brink.
Right. That's right. And, you know, figures, you know, great liberals such as Ronald Reagan said it's nonsense that we're, you know, having arguments over the full faith and credit of the United States. But here we are again, and it's probably more consequential than ever because, thanks to Kevin McCarthy's concessions, it's now baked in the cake that they have to extract extraordinary concessions. They want to basically rewrite spending for the current and future years. Get spending back to levels from 2 years back, which would, I think it amounts to, I don't know, something like 17% across the board cuts for all of government. Or if the Pentagon is going to be protected from that, then you're looking at cuts of double that to the rest of the government. And that's going to include Social Security and everything else. So, you know, Kevin McCarthy can't even manage a simple vote. Like they wanted to have a symbolic vote to honor the service of police officers. They had to pull it from the floor. They couldn't muster the votes for that. So nobody thinks McCarthy's going to be able to thread the needle here. And what's already started happening is you've got the relatively few Republican moderates that there are, like Brian Fitzpatrick, have begun to talk to Democrats about how to, you know, do a discharge petition. There are various other parliamentary tricks you could do.
Explain a discharge petition. That is basically saying that you put a bill on the floor, right?
Yeah, basically, if you can get enough members of the House, you know, to sign on to do this, you can force a bill onto the floor. And there are other ways to do this. There's something called calling the previous question, PQ in the lingo.
How often is that done? How often
approximately never.
They're both
extremely difficult to do. What's happening now, you know, from what I understand and what I'm told, is Kevin McCarthy is very privately hoping and praying that a discharge petition can come through, because there's no way he can get out of this jam. He's got a choice of, you know, listen to his crazies, which will inevitably bring about a default on the debt, because the demands will just be preposterous. There'll be no way to meet those.
And why don't we talk about what that would mean to our economy, the world economy?
Right. The truth is, we have no idea, because it's never happened before, because the consequences are too catastrophic to contemplate. So suddenly all of our debt is much more expensive. The dollar loses its place of prominence in the world. We don't know what kind of shock it can set off that could bring about recession and worse.
The dollar is the default currency in the world, right?
Yes. Now it'll give new meaning to default if the default currency defaults. Yes.
Mark Zandi, chief economist of Moody's, says that a prolonged impasse over the debt ceiling would cost the U.S. economy up to 6 million jobs, wipe out as much as $15 trillion in household wealth, and send the unemployment rate surging to roughly 9%.
All we know is it would create a huge economic shock of the sort we have not seen before, so we don't really even know. I mean, that's why nobody has seriously contemplated, except for a relatively small number of Republicans have contemplated doing this before. But now they're very much in charge, and McCarthy either decides, I follow the Freedom Caucus off the cliff of default, or I push back against them. And that is the very last thing I will do as a Speaker of the House, because, you know, the next day there will be a motion to vacate the chair.
And that one member can do that.
Any one member can do it. And if you have more than four, as all Americans have seen over and over again now, if you have more than four House Republicans against McCarthy, they can dethrone him by voting with Democrats to defeat him. Now, again, he can work with Democrats to survive a motion to vacate the chair. He can work with Democrats to pass a clean or relatively clean debt limit increase. But then he's effectively abandoned his ability to be the speaker. He would have lost all the support of his party, and he would have even less power than he has right now.
Is there a scenario where Democrats say he's our speaker, or does that happen?
Well, yeah, not without, you know, a huge concession. So, I mean, I think this is more in the realm of theory than, you know, the possibility. Of course, he could reach out to Democrats and say, you know, I need X number of votes to get this debt limit through, and in exchange, I'll bring up the following pieces of legislation. And Democrats could then work with him to defeat a motion to vacate the chair. So in theory, you could see that happening. But as a practical matter, the moment he does that, he's lost all of his power anyway. First of all, he's never going to be reelected. He'd never again be nominated by his caucus. And then it would just be open warfare between the Freedom Caucus and him, and probably a lot of other Republicans who would be pissed off about it. So he may keep the speakership in title, but he would not have any power. It would just be open warfare every day.
But he could prevent a worldwide.
Correct. He could fall on his sword and prevent calamity and move on as John Boehner and Paul Ryan did.
I think that's how long do you see him lasting?
Some people say they think he'll remain speaker throughout the year. Also adding the caveat that he could remain speaker in name only and have no power. But, you know, there's not, until this vote, which probably can be put off till July, there's not a lot of reasons Republicans would have to dethrone him. You know, it's a lot of messaging legislation and, you know, the investigations we were talking about. Like, there's not really a lot of must-pass legislation that has to happen.
Well, in fact, there's none. in a way.
Okay, none is not is even less than not a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, the spending bills will need to be passed by later in the year. But yes, there's nothing really during the spring that absolutely has to go through.
Well, I mean, but we have a Democratic Senate that won't pass anything that the House passes.
Mm-hmm.
And a Republican House that won't pass anything the Senate passes.
Yep.
I mean, so it seems like there's one piece of legislation that this whole term is going to be decided by.
Well, yes. I mean, up through July, and then, you know, look, the current year's spending runs out in September. So that'll be followed shortly by, you know, the next government shutdown crisis. That's what Republicans and Democrats worked to avoid in December, passing this through till September, so that because they knew that Kevin McCarthy could obviously not be handling that. Could you imagine if Kevin McCarthy were trying to get that through the Congress right now? It obviously wouldn't be possible. So, yeah, those are the two major things we can see now. But we don't know what other war may break out, you know, what other natural disaster, what national emergency could require some sort of action that, you know, suddenly you do have a must pass piece of legislation and you don't have the ability to pass it. So, you know, it is possible that, you know, indeed, it's likely there's always some sort of crisis or another. We just don't know what it'll be yet.
Speaking of wars and crises, Marjorie Taylor Greene is kind of famously pro Putin, right?
It would seem that way, yeah.
I know she appeared with Nick Fuentes, who is what's the White Nationalist Conference at that, and he's kind of a Putin fan, right?
Yeah, I mean, you see it in the, you know, her pretty stalwart opposition to more aid for Ukraine. She mocks it as the 51st state.
You know, it's short-sighted. Well, you know, calling her short-sighted. But is that this is such a good bargain for us, the money we're spending in Ukraine, if you think about it, because, you know, what was about $40 billion last year and $40 billion this year? And that's like, I don't know, 5-6% of our defense budget. And Russia is our second biggest enemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next to China.
Right.
And what do we get for this? Well, we've got 100,000 Russians dead or wounded, and we've got all their weapons being destroyed, and we don't have to have a soldier on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you're thinking about it in those terms, it's a pretty good way to leverage your power. And of course, the Europeans are paying more than their usual share for doing this. And yeah, it's been a huge embarrassment for Putin. Usually, you would think that in the American government, but in Congress, they would like to back a winner. So, you know, Zelensky, the Ukrainians have, you know, given all kinds of reasons to celebrate and rally around. So it's actually kind of difficult now to take the position.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think the response to him at the State of the Union, there were very few sitting on their hands.
Right. There was an imbalance in what was going on. I was watching from the chamber, you know, for exactly such hand sitting. And, you know, there was a little less enthusiasm, but basically you had a large number of you know, the crazy caucus of the Republicans just sitting it out entirely. They weren't there at all. But yes, so the effect in the House was to give him the adulation that he seemed to deserve as this, you know, extraordinary wartime leader that nobody expected would emerge.
Yeah, well, you know, he's the bravest man in the world. And of course, because, you know, he's a comedian
mm-hmm.
and Jewish.
Look at that.
Yeah, and a Jewish comedian went into politics, so there you go.
It's a formidable combination.
Yeah.
Somebody here ought to try that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dana Milbank.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And we're back with Dana Milbank from the Washington Post. So who are, tell me about the players that were involved, like Scott Perry. Now, is Perry going to be sitting on one of these committees?
Oh, yes. No, he's on the Hunter Biden committee. Yeah, the Oversight and Accountability, it's called.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about him, because wasn't he pushing for Jeffrey Clark? Isn't he the guy who talked to Mark Meadows for Jeffrey Clark to be the guy who stepped in the Justice Department?
He's the current head of the Freedom Caucus. He's not out there all the time like Gates and Boebert. Yes, he was heavily involved in January 6th. You know, he, as you probably saw with, you know, from some of his nominating speeches during the McCarthy battle, he's a little more careful than some of the other members. But he's not the top of my list for characters who are going to inflame the situation. But, you know, he's certainly
who's at the top?
Well, I mean, obviously you saw Gates, you saw Boebert. Green will be back, and she's being called Benedict Arnold for not joining them on in the McCarthy battle. You know, somebody think about Paul Gosar. You know, a man with just absolutely nothing to lose. He's on that oversight committee as well. He's the one who, you know, had that anime video of him killing AOC. He's the one who
is bad judgment, I thought,
frequently at white nationalist conferences, QAnon conferences. He has come out, in recent months, talking about the huge danger of fluoride in the water supply. Like, that's a conspiracy from another time.
That's Dr. Strangelove, isn't
that? That's right. He's back, 60 years later. And Gosar was a dentist. So now he's...
Really?
Now he's he's opposed to fluoride in the drinking water. He is not saying it's for mind control. He just thinks it's really bad for our health. So you've got Andy Biggs, his brother in Arizona, another guy with nothing to lose, who, you know, threw his name into contention. To, you know, he was the original stalking horse.
Well, let's talk about the weaponization of the government subcommittee, which now Jordan chairs that, right? In addition to judiciary.
Right. He chairs judiciary and weaponization.
They're going to be looking at specifically what cases, do you know?
Well, it might be easier to say what they wouldn't be looking at. I mean, okay. You know, it's a completely wide open portfolio. It is anywhere they perceive that the government has been weaponized against them. So IRS, FBI, DOJ, CIA definitely includes the use of Twitter and social media, supposedly against conservatives and Trump Republicans. Yeah, I mean, that basically is the whole gamut. I think it probably is everything except for the Hunter Biden stuff, because that would be the House Oversight Committee, although it would not be a terrible surprise to see multiple committees going after that the way they did with Benghazi.
And what is their, ultimately, is their case? I have not followed the Hunter Biden stuff. What's the there?
Well, they keep saying they're going to get to the big guy, and that's his father. I try to keep up with what it is. I think the American public Everybody, has Hunter Biden has virtually a universal name ID. It's kind of baked into the cake that, he's been an addict and he's done a lot of sleazy stuff, may well have done illegal stuff. That's what the Justice Department is investigating. So I think the question becomes, if Republicans are just pointing out that Hunter Biden is an addict who did a lot of sleazy stuff, they're not going to advance the ball a whole lot. It will be an effort to say that, in fact, Joe Biden is corrupt to the core, and this is their way into that. Now, you know Joe Biden quite well. I've been covering him for 30 years. There's a lot of bad things you can say about Joe Biden and his
non-inspiring sometimes.
His gaffes and his public speaking and whatever, but
corrupt to the core isn't what I think.
Yeah, it's just not, that's not his game. Wish them well, but it just, that's not Joe Biden's designated flaw. They can presumably keep going on and, demonstrating him to be senile. That would be an easier door to push open than deciding that he's in fact completely in command and hugely corrupt.
I mean, he's not senile.
That's the thing. I've been covering him since 1995, and I've gone back to the stories I used to write. He would forget things and say ridiculous things all the time. That's what he did. That's his stock in trade. He is always, was always putting his foot in his mouth. He was always, in judiciary, remember? He would go on and on and on, and it would be, 30 minutes into it, legs are up, people are ready to nap, and he's like, and now I'm going to go into my speech.
Yeah, I was at a number of events where he did that while he was vice president.
Yeah
I remember once I was at a dinner where the MC said something like, a successful dinner in D.C. is when you get out at 9.
Yes.
And this dinner was Mondale and Carter, and they were there to discuss the vice presidency, because Mondale had really invented the modern vice presidency. And of course, Biden is the vice president at the time, so he's been invited to speak. And he talked a long time. He spoke for like 40 minutes, and I was one of the speakers at the end. I said, look, it was coming on 11. And I said, the reason that we're not getting out at 9 is not Joe Biden's fault.
Uh-huh.
His is the reason we're not getting out till 11. Got a big laugh.
Yeah.
He had left.
Right. It wasn't that big an exaggeration even. So.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And I saw him do that many times. So mercifully, during the last presidential campaign, because of COVID, he was not. That didn't happen. He wasn't on the stump.
Right.
Going on and on and on. He had prepared speeches and they saw that it worked to go not too long.
Right. And given his propensity to step in it, it's really extraordinary that he hasn't had more of those moments in his presidency so far, because he does get out there and, answer questions. And each time it's like, playing with a loaded gun. You just don't know what's going to happen there.
But now, he has a record. Infrastructure. Trump didn't get that done. The CHIPS deal, addressing China. Part of that record is the Inflation Reduction Act. That's what it's called. I'm not sure if that was the best name for it. There's so many good things in that, and that in this last cycle that we didn't see. In other words, that hadn't happened yet.
Right.
So in terms of Medicare negotiating with pharmaceuticals, just the cost of insulin for seniors, caps on what seniors, that stuff. And then all this stuff that's addressing climate. So yeah. He's going to have a lot of stuff to point to.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that. And who knows? It's difficult to predict the economic future. But what we've seen lately is a cooling of inflation without the, with the job market still going gangbusters, which suggests that, a soft landing is at least possible. So, yeah, it's, I mean, from where we sit here, you could see a relatively healthy economy next year. People are starting to see the improvements you talked about, you know, rural broadband, the and electric cars, all kinds of, you know, things actually becoming available to people. And then you will definitely see the Hunter Biden committee as the alternative.
Right. And so optically, I think that's good. It's just, you know, of course, he's going to be 18 months older.
That's true.
So I, you know, but, you know, so far he's doing pretty damn good, I think.
And there's been no deterioration. I can assure you he's the same man I saw in 1995.
Well, there you go. And you've been watching pretty closely. In 95, you were working for New Republic or something?
It was actually the Wall Street Journal. I was up covering Congress for the Wall Street Journal back then.
Well, you've been covering it for a long time, and this is an interesting time to be doing it, but I think it all comes down to how this debt ceiling is handled.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
That's the big event. And when are we talking about June?
I think, you know, you never know exactly. I think just today they've started extraordinary measures to keep the...
That was today, yeah.
Yeah, but...
Today is Thursday for everybody.
Yes, you never know exactly the date certain, but yeah.
What is an... What extraordinary measure are there? Is paying certain things and not other things?
Yeah, robbing Peter to pay Paul and, you know, prioritizing, you know, which debt you repay so you technically don't default on anything. So I'm very glad I don't have to cover that stuff because that's lost on me.
Well, thank you, Dana.
Well, thank you for having me. I miss you. I miss you in the Capitol.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.